Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. With the unprovoked attack on Iran, Donald Trump demonstrates his administration's preference for war over negotiations. What Trump's strategic goal is remains unclear. However, have no doubt the law of unintended consequences is now in play. Iran will retaliate. Escalation is front and center. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He is an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means he can jump in anytime you want. All right, let's kick this off with Mark. Geez, those 2 weeks went by real quick, didn't it?
Well, Donald Trump's, shall we say, understanding of time appears to be extremely fluid. Of course, that was just another ruse by the Trump administration in yet another attempt to lull the Iranian government into a false sense of that they had time, while it was simply finishing moving its military assets and into play to be able to conduct these bombing strikes on Iran. And this is a premeditated, unprovoked, illegal act of aggression on another state, particularly bombing nuclear facilities, is also a violation of international law, a major risk, of course, to the global environment, and a violation of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, by which Iran has the express right, as a signatory to that treaty, to conduct a civilian nuclear program, which no one has made any serious argument that that is not what they were doing. The sites that were hit by the United States were sites that were under inspection by the International Atomic Energy Agency for years now. In fact, the only country that we have in question here that does not have International Atomic Energy Agency inspections is Israel, of course. But I don't think it's actually a given that Iran will immediately retaliate against the United States.
Well, that's exactly where I want to go. You know, George, it seems to me, obviously, when Trump made his announcement to the nation that he used a pronoun, the United States in Israel. Reflecting on what Mark just said here, I think retaliation is obvious. It's only a matter of time, but how it is. It seems to me that Iran will most likely want to attack the Trump administration. What do I mean by that? Hurt Trump, oil prices, things like this, asymmetrical warfare. It's not going to go toe-to-toe with the United States militarily. It's not foolish enough to do that. However, I think that the conflict, the Israeli-Iran conflict, will remain separate from this, at least for the time being. Your thoughts, George?
No, I agree with that. But Iran's in a very tight spot right now because the United States isn't just going to leave it alone. I mean, the whole idea that Trump saying, well, this is just a one-off, we did this, and then, you know, we're going to get back to doing other things. You know, Iran knows exactly what happened to Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was a much diminished. He was under sanctions. He was really not a force any longer in the Middle East. Nonetheless, there was this constant drumbeat. We have to address the problem of Saddam Hussein. There'll be no peace in the Middle East as long as Saddam Hussein is there. And eventually, there was the invasion to get him out. There is no question at all that within hours and within days, there will be a drumbeat in Washington, led by Israel and its allies, that as long as the regime survives in Tehran, there will be no peace or stability in the Middle East, and that Trump now has the opportunity, this is a historic opportunity, to get rid of this malign force in the Middle East. That's what's going to happen. So Iran really is in a very difficult position, because if he doesn't do anything, if he just sits on his hands, he's basically just inviting an attack down the road, later this year, next year, but it's definitely coming. But if it does do something, then, of course, as you say, it's going toe-to-toe against the United States. And, of course, there is also the sanctions that are going to come into place in October when those JCPOA-related sanctions are snapped back in place. So Iran is in a very difficult position. I mean, if I were giving advice, I'd say that they need to do something. I mean, if they need to show that they are serious and that they will make America pay a price, because at least that could weaken and damage the Trump brand. Because at the moment, Trump is sort of absolutely the cock of the walk. He's absolutely very pleased with himself, and all his supporters are thoroughly delighted. So if you raise the cost to the United States, because there's a lot of doubts in America about the wisdom of this action. You know, everyone is very concerned. So that, I think, it would make sense for Iran to retaliate and raise the costs for America.
Mark, what kind of retaliation is possible?
Okay, so Iran does not want a direct war with the United States, right? I mean, that is clear. But they may not have a choice in the matter. In fact, I assume that they don't have a choice in the matter. Iran could show restraint. They've already launched another missile salvo at Israel, right, in defiance of Trump demanding and screaming childish all capital letters, now that he's bombed Iran, that now is the time for peace, right, and that Iran once again should surrender. Iran has other options other than just striking Iran. For instance, they could activate what is left of the axis of resistance, forces in Iraq, in Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, to have them strike against the United States, i.e. strike back against proxies. Iran could strike an empty U.S. military base as a way of saving face. The U.S. has evacuated several military bases in Syria and Iraq over the coming days. Or they could presume that in probably just a matter of days, no matter what they do, that the U.S. is going to escalate to regime change against them anyway and just go for broke. And possibly flood the Strait of Hormuz with mines as their quote-unquote nuclear option to raise the price of oil, which would hurt Trump, would hurt him politically, you know, raising the price of oil, gasoline, and everything in the United States. So, unfortunately for the Iranian government, showing restraint will just be read as weakness. And Netanyahu is... I mean, he's got to be like he just, you know, celebrated his bar mitzvah or something.
He just won the lottery.
He's been maneuvering and campaigning for the U.S. to fight Iran for him for more than 30 years now. I mean, the smug grin on his face, he's there.
Yeah, but George, as Mark pointed out, you know, I don't know if it's a matter of minutes or hours after the successful strike, as Donald Trump put it. We have no idea if that's true or not at this point. A new variant of a ballistic missile from Iran attacked Israel. And even though the Israeli authorities are really tight on allowing people to share that kind of video of the destruction, from what I saw, it looks pretty devastating here. So Donald Trump takes it upon himself to unilaterally in an unprovoked way to attack Iran. But it hasn't stopped the other conflict, the Iran-Israel conflict. So, like, again, how long can you keep them separate, or is this just an artificial separation at this point?
Well, I think it is an artificial separation, because if this will continues between Iran and Israel, and it will, Israel isn't going to let up. Israel is going to continue to attack Iran. So just because Trump said, oh, this is just a one-off, Israel doesn't regard it as one-off. Israel wants to continue to fight and provoke the conflict in order to get Trump in to finish the job. So, of course, this will continue.
Well, what does that mean? What does that mean, finish the job? I think that's really important here, because the question's like, what does victory mean here? What does defeat mean here? I mean, it's very interesting, you know. So continue there, because finishing the job, What's that mean?
Finish the job is regime change. They want the regime in Tehran gone. There's no question. That's the goal of Israel, is to remove this the regime. This is always Israel. Israel never addresses the real problems facing Israel, and it always creates these fantasy issues, you know, Nasser, Arafat, Saddam Hussein, the Ayatollahs. There's always somebody was standing in the way of peace and stability in the Middle East. So Israel will continue. But what they want from Trump, that's always what they want. It wasn't removal of these three nuclear facilities. What they want is the removal of the regime in Tehran. And that's what they're going to be doing within the next hours and days and weeks. And with all their mouthpieces in the United States, all the Ben Shapiros and Mark Levins and everything. We've got to finish the job. We have to finish the job. They've never been as weak as this, and there can never be peace as long as the Ayatollah is there. Trump is going to be dragged into this. There's just no question. I mean,
dragged into this. Mark, what does it mean, dragged into this? Go ahead. Yeah.
Dragged into this mean Trump himself jumped full score into the abyss with the gaggle of neocons that he surrounded himself. He has been an unabashed Israel first Zionist supporter of Israel since his first administration, when he recognized the Israeli capital as Jerusalem. So, I mean, there's no dragging, right? Trump drags conflicts around with him like, ball bearings on the end of chains, like he's some kind of kaiju destroying the world. So victory is clear, right? For the Iranian government, survival of their government. That is the ultimate. The secondary goal would be to inflict enough missile damage on Israel that they give up this conflict. That's secondary. Survival is first. For the U.S. and Israel, it's regime change. The question is, do they have a plan for regime change? Because just bombing the heck out of Iran is not going to cause regime change. Right now, at least, there seems to be a significant rally around the flag effect in Iran. The neocons seem to have convinced Trump, that the Iranian people will rise up and overthrow their evil mullah regime as soon as our bombs start dropping on them. Yeah, I'm not so sure that's a plan. What I'm worried about is Mossad and CIA penetration of Iran, right? They already demonstrated that with assassinations, bombings, these drone attacks. What else do they have aces up the sleeves? What about the terrorist, dangerous cult, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, that the U.S. has on a leash in Albania? What about Baluchi and Azeri separatists? What kind of terrorist and mercenary networks does Mossad still have yet to be activated in Iran? The missile strikes, bombing strikes on Iran will just be to set a stage of political, social, and economic crisis for a covert regime change operation.
All right, hold that thought, Mark. Hold that thought. We're going to have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's new war against Iran. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. We're discussing Trump's war on Iran. George, let's broaden this out a little bit here, because both of you think strategically and in a geopolitical sense. How are the Russians and the Chinese watching this?
Well, Russia really hasn't said so far, hasn't said anything very much. It did condemn the Israeli attack. But however, it also suggested, well, we're going to try and mediate the conflict, as if there's a conflict between Israel and Iran. Putin talked about the sort of special relationship that Russia has with Israel. So the Russians are mostly preoccupied with their own relationship with Trump. So, you know, they still haven't said anything negative about him. They still are hopeful that something or other can be worked out with him. And I think
Trump... Well, I mean, George, why would the Russians have any hope that you can deal with the United States as a fair broker? I think that train has left the station.
It's fatuous, but on the other hand, I mean, if you just go by the statements of the Russian leaders, Putin and Lavrov, they never say anything negative about Trump. And even today, they haven't said anything negative about, this rather big...
The reason attacking a
sovereign state.
Well, the reason why I ask this, Mark, because Trump's unilateral and unprovoked attack on Iran is an attack on Russia, at least indirectly.
It is, and Putin actually made clear in his speech at the St. Petersburg Economic Forum, one of several, that he, as far as he's concerned, Iran and Russia are fighting the same enemy, which is the United States. I mean, he didn't say that, but he said that, right? I mean, he made that clear, that the United States is behind the conflict in Ukraine, and the United States is now directly on the warpath against Iran. Now, Russia has a complicated situation, and this shocked a lot of people, including me. He let go some details during the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum that the strategic partnership that was agreed upon by Russia and Iran, the new deep and strengthened one, late last year, first of all, it had only been ratified by the Iranian parliament last week, I mean, on Monday, right? Second of all, Russia offered defense cooperation to Iran. They offered a mutual defense pact similar to what Russia has with North Korea, essentially an Article 5 clause to it. And they also, separately offered air defense cooperation, even the building of air defense missiles and systems within Iran and coordination with Russia's own air defense and electronic warfare system. Iran said no.
Well, tell everybody why they said no, because it's kind of a bad joke now in retrospect, considering that. Go ahead.
The Iranian moderate president Pezeshkian, who was elected on a very, very naive idea that you could placate and improve relations with the beast that is the U.S. and the West, he feared that aligning with Russia at a time when Russia was at war with the West in Ukraine could lead to a direct Iranian-U.S. Confrontation, which is what they have now anyway.
And but it already has happened here. George, I mean, you can look at we could look at some other actors on the international stage. The Chinese must be, what? They're doing it again in the Middle East? Okay, all right. And of course, Zelensky, the former president of Ukraine, he must be crying in his hat right now. I mean, Trump's decision, it's a one-off. Now it's time to talk. I don't know who's telling him this, who is trying to convince him this is going to happen. None of those things are going to happen. In my introduction to this program, the law of unintended consequences is game on right now. George.
Well, that's right. And it's very interesting because, of course, supposedly, China was the big issue for Trump. It has been his big issue since 2015, 2016. Oh, China is the rising power. We need to address the problem of China. China's undercutting our economy. We need to, reindustrialize and essentially eliminate the threat from China. But what he has done now is got himself into the Middle East, the very thing, the very issue on which he, emerged as the standard bearer of the Republican Party. No more stupid wars in the Middle East. No, we're not going to do that. Well, everything that George W. Bush did, he said all these were lies. Everything that George W. Bush told us were lies. That was his calling card. That's how he got the nomination. But yet here, he's now in this situation in the Middle East, and the Chinese are thinking, well, okay, now you've got this problem, and yet this is going to bog you down. So if the Chinese were concerned that Trump was going to deal with them and address them and focus on the issue of China, They're going to be relieved by this. Okay, well, you've got this problem on your hands. And this is going to be a problem for Trump. There's no support in the United States for this. He hasn't provided any kind of an explanation as to why he did this. And, you know, he's cooked up the usual kind of fake intelligence. And in his comments over the weekend, he essentially said, it's about Israel. We did this.
Well, exactly. So, Mark, is as a result of this unprovoked unilateral attack, how much safer is Israel today?
Well, Israel is, of course, no safer, and the missiles coming in on Haifa and Tel Aviv this morning, in at least partial retaliation for the rather really irrelevant and perhaps ineffective strikes by the U.S. on Iran's nuclear facilities. Iran, first of all, dismantled all of their nuclear facilities and centrifuges when the JCPOA went into effect, several years ago. And when Trump ripped up the JCPOA in his first administration, Iran simply restarted building everything. I mean, you can't destroy knowledge, no matter how many Iranian scientists Israel assassinates. So Iran can easily rebuild. And now they have a real definite reason for a strategic nuclear deterrent.
Well, Mark, would they leave the non-proliferation treaty as a result now?
I absolutely believe so. What good has it done them?
What value is the IAEA right now?
Iran has made it clear the IAEA has actually facilitated the U.S. attacks on. So there's absolutely zero reason. It must be also be said that if Iran had agreed to a mutual defense pact with Russia, this attack would not be happening, because Israel would not risk going to war with Russia over Iran. So this whole debacle, I think, is a fatal conceit of any idea that you can do diplomacy with the U.S., particularly with the Trump administration, and that, you know, strength is the only language that the United States understands.
Yeah, but strength doesn't translate into security. I think it's a false equation there. You know, George, not only did the Trump administration deceive the Iranians, they deceived the entire world, okay? Most people want these things resolved. All of us weeks ago were thinking, well, it's doable, okay? It's not going to be easy, but it's doable. It wasn't impossible, okay? The president that's sitting now in the Oval Office did, predecessor did have a deal, okay? You know, it was possible. But the deceit goes much further, and I think maybe this is a card that the Iranians may be thinking about. He deceived his own base.
He deceived his own base, and the reason why we were cautiously optimistic is that we assume that the United States will act in a rational, self-interested way. There's a deal to be had here, and there is a, you know, Iran has said, we're not interested in nuclear weapons. The United States doesn't want Iran to have nuclear weapons. Well, what's the conflict? You know, then there's a deal to be had. And who wasn't happy with the deal? Israel. Israel was absolutely determined to sabotage the deal. Israel has always had the agenda, as we mentioned earlier, of regime change. Israel went to work to finally secure a U.S. president who would essentially secure
Israel. It took Netanyahu 30 years. It took him 30 years, but he found a taker.
Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Obama, Biden, every single one of them that had said no to Israel. Israel, you know, Netanyahu has been pushing this line about regime change in Tehran, and they got Trump. And Trump really made this explicit. This is about Israel. Because otherwise, a rational self-interest would say, hey, there's a deal here. Iran goes back to 3% or whatever enrichment capability. All enriched uranium will be shipped out of the country, and everyone will be happy. But instead, Trump embarked essentially on an Israel agenda. And he's still pursuing an Israel agenda.
Well, it's locked
in,
but
the base is baffled. America first. This is Israel first.
Well, Trump is locked in now. Okay, he crossed the Rubicon. You know, Mark, we keep hearing peace through strength, but really peace through strength is chaos, Mark.
Well, first of all, I have to say, George, you may have been cautiously optimistic. I noticed you used the we plural pronoun there. I was never cautiously optimistic because I believe that optimism and hope are the mind killers. But regardless, is the idea that strength leads to chaos, when we're talking, particularly military, industrial strength, all the basics of the foundations of the balance of power, if you will. I would say that chaos happens anyway. And weakness and a false clinging that you can deal diplomacy and placate, you know, the Western hegemon, the U.S. and its vassals and allies, is also false. So you really, I believe that pursuing military and economic strength to back that up is absolutely essential. It may lead to conflict anyway, but weakness will lead to conflict and defeat regardless. So I don't agree with that, I have to say.
Okay, gentlemen, much more to discuss, but not on this program. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.